This is Cass Club Radio.
Brought to you by Heritage Distilling.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. On Cass Club Radio, we believe every spirit has a story. And stories, like good drinks, are always better when shared with friends.
Each week, we'll explore the intersection of cocktails, spirits, beer, wine, and life.
It's Cass Club Radio. Here's your hosts, Lydia Cruz and Justin Stiefel.
Good afternoon, friends. Welcome to Cass Club Radio. Your host, Lydia Cruz.
And I'm Justin Stiefel.
And I'm Maura Dooley.
And happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Early Merry Christmas.
If you're listening in the car, you're probably out and about doing last-minute Christmas shopping.
Yeah, it's okay.
Because tomorrow is Christmas.
Good luck. Yeah.
Right? And you're trying to hit the stores before they close. And when you get home, you're going to need a good stiff drink.
Exactly.
To calm your nerves. Maybe you're preparing dinner for the family that's arriving tonight. Or
do you guys have any special Christmas traditions? Anything in particular with your family?
My wife makes these things called, it's called monkey bread.
Yeah.
It sits in the oven overnight with the butterscotch pudding on top. And
ooh.
Then in the morning, everything has set and risen overnight, and you just turn the oven on and it bakes.
Yum.
And it's
wow.
Like these really amazing, very sticky buns. She calls
yeah.
it monkey bread.
Yeah. Is that like a creation of her own? Or
no, it's recipes she found
down?
Online. She gets the Pillsbury dough biscuit stuff.
Okay.
Or the rolls, like the rolls from the freezer rolls that
mm-hmm.
haven't cooked yet. And that's what rises overnight, but you got to sprinkle the butterscotch pudding mix
on top.
Good
way to start off day.
Maybe some walnuts or raisins in there too. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Mine is food themed too. We usually just do Thanksgiving dinner all over again, and I'm very happy with that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, we usually do like a surf and turf on Christmas. I'm not sure how that tradition started, but there's always some crab legs involved. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's big time.
Fancy.
I'm with you guys.
Can I come over?
Yeah, you're invited. Don't worry. More than enough to go around. Well, let's take a look what's going on in the news this week, because even though it's the holiday week, there's still some crazy, crazy things happening. How about this? Have you guys ever used Yelp or any sort of, I don't know, online review website to maybe form your opinions?
I have never Yelped myself. I mean,
yeah.
I've looked at it. But yeah, you can't trust people on there.
No. They've turned into kind of, and this story is proof. A journalist in the UK, Vice journalist named Uba Butler, decided they were going to create a fake restaurant of sorts, named it The Shed at Dulwich. Sounds like it definitely could be a restaurant.
It's either a restaurant or a Stephen King novel. The Shed at Dulwich.
Right, it does also sound like it could be a horror novel, but basically created this restaurant, uploaded pics, fake pics to TripAdvisor, including fake pictures of, quote, posh food that was offered at The Shed at Dulwich. A lot of it was just fashioned out of shaving foam. He got his friends to write fake reviews on here, and it quickly became the most popular website in that area, which is crazy.
Yeah, the thing that disturbs me the most is the use of the word posh. If something is described as posh, I actually try to avoid it generally.
Mm, yeah.
First rule of thumb for me.
A little cultural difference, though. They're probably...
yeah.
More into that.
That is their thing. I just think of the Spice Girls when I hear the word posh.
hey now. Yeah.
But the idea that this really is the emperor has no clothes. So the idea that you can go on and purposely create a whole fictitious thing in an attempt to get followers is a big deal. And it's why at our company, we're pretty selective about what we do with Yelp and TripAdvisor and all that kind of stuff, because mm-hmm. you never know who's getting paid to do what.
Yeah.
And we have had instances where we get phone calls from some of these companies that are offering us services to push negative reviews down or elevate positive reviews, if only we would sign up for
it's
some of the
like
services.
Straight extortion. I've
totally.
Heard of people doing this too.
So we don't play that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm definitely going to cancel my reservation for The Shed at Dulwich because
yeah.
I was ready to go eat dinner, but no. You know,
no, not into the shaving foam so much.
Well, this next one comes to us from CNN. Pizza Hut testing beer and wine delivery.
That's pretty awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, I like it.
So imagine today's Christmas Eve, and maybe you're doing a kind of casual prep stuff before tomorrow's big day, and you want to order pizza, and you want to get beer or wine delivered. I mean, that is like as American as it gets. If only they would deliver apple pie, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me, this is where everything's going. Amazon's already delivering beer, wine, spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Why not restaurants be able to do the same thing, especially when you see information about the fast casual dining kind of flattening and more people going into those fast casual places to get orders to go because they don't want to eat in a restaurant, they want to eat to go. So the ability to round out your meal with what you want to consume, to me, makes a lot of sense. And here in Washington, we actually got the law change. We can deliver spirits to your home now too. Distilleries can. So you can go online, order, or call and have a bottle of whiskey delivered to your house.
Yeah, it seems like it would be smart for them with all of the like Amazon and different services like that starting to do things like this. It's only smart for the restaurants to try to offer those services and compete.
Totally. And you can reduce the amount of intoxicated drivers on the road because you're delivering product to the home where they're going to be instead of people going to the restaurants, ordering, and then leaving.
Yeah.
So we're going to watch and see what happens. What will be interesting will be Pizza Hut's sheer size, volume, and number of locations they have. It'll be interesting to see what kind of beer variety they allow people to choose from for delivery. Is it just going to be big mass-produced stuff like Bud Light, or are they going to have cool local craft features market by market by market?
It'd be really interesting because as of now, it's saying that they're just going to charge a flat $10.99 for all options. So I'm curious to see, will it only be these big names like Budweiser and Bud Light, or are you going to get some of the craft local stuff, which I think would be a lot cooler?
That'd be really cool. It'd also be interesting to watch some of our local pizza chain houses here like Zeke's Pizza or others mm-hmm. that have local options. Are they going to get into the beer delivery game too? Hopefully so.
Okay, so this next story involves one of the hottest or most popular commercials on TV right now, those Bud Light commercials. I'm sure you've seen one. They end in Dilly Dilly.
Dilly Dilly.
Ugh.
Lydia, not a fan?
Sorry. No, I mean, maybe I'm just being inundated with it. And then also friends and people also saying it to me.
The pit of misery.
Yes, that's pretty hilarious. I'll give you that.
The pit of misery.
Yeah.
Dilly Dilly. So, you know, the geniuses at Bud Light, Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch come out with all sorts of great stuff like the Budweiser frogs. Now they have this whole theme of TV ads around this notion of Dilly Dilly, as in huzzah, huzzah. Modest Brewing Company decided to make Dilly Dilly double hopped IPA. And our friends at Anheuser-Busch sent them a cease and desist letter. But how did they do it?
Creatively. Yeah.
They're learning. You can't just be heavy-handed and go in and send a nasty gram because it will backlash. So instead, they send in somebody dressed like an old English lawyer with the hat and the tights and the whole thing. And I don't even know if he had the wig on. But he walked in and read the proclamation live in front of everybody. And
the cease and desist was on a
town crier.
On the scroll, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then attached it to the side of the building like you normally would do in the past. Now, we've now given you notice. Hear ye, mm-hmm. hear ye. And so this was a creative way of doing it. And they also, Amara said, you read with Anheuser-Busch gave them tickets to the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah?
They were pretty nice about it. It's cool that they play nice with the little guys and, you know, don't bully people for being such a big corporation.
Yeah, and I think the response from these guys at Modest Brewing Company was also kind of tongue-in-cheek. They appreciated the fact that Anheuser-Busch was doing it this way instead of just being nasty about it. But I do like the name Dilly Dilly. Dilly Dilly.
Lydia's still not on board.
No. Not on board?
Coming up on Cast Club Radio, well, have you been on the Great Wheel here in Seattle yet? It's become an iconic part of Seattle's skyline. We talked to one of the minds behind this great Seattle attraction, as well as several others. That's next on Cast Club Radio. Welcome back to Cast Club Radio. Now, recently, the whole gang here sat down with our friend Mike Griffith down at the Crab Pot. He is one of the great minds behind several iconic Seattle attractions, including the Great Wheel.
We are at the Crab Pot down at Fisherman's Landing.
Miner's Landing.
It's been here how long?
This pier in particular has been here since the turn of late 1800s. My office is actually in the original store, like building front on the waterfront from 1895. Where the USS Portland landed right off the north side here with a ton of gold. What basically brought Seattle to the focus of the Yukon Gold Rush. So it's a pretty old building. Hopefully we don't fall through.
Yeah, right. And you're hearing the voice of Mike Griffith.
Yep. I'm the grandson of the Hal Griffith, the owner of, I guess he's more of a consultant these days. My two uncles are the owners of our whole operation. So.
And still family owned?
Yep, still family owned and operated. It's my two uncles and myself that run the day-to-day operation. Very large company, operated very small. So
how many people?
We range, you know, honestly, from a few hundred to over 1,000, depending on what time of year it is.
1,000 employees.
Yeah, depending on what time of year it is. I mean, we have drastic peaks and valleys here on the waterfront. And that's, I mean, our full employment travels all the way down to California. We have multiple companies, and we have restaurants in California as well. Crab Pot in Long Beach and Fisherman's down in San Clemente. We're lucky to have employees that have worked with us for a long period of time, so it's more of a family. When we have our holiday party with the managers, it's really just a get-together and an excuse to hang out. A lot of these managers have known me since I was 10 years old when I started nosing around the pier.
And you have Seattle's newest attraction?
Yeah, Wings Over Washington. My Uncle Kyle put that in. We opened it in 2000, I think it was end of 2015, so it's been open for, 2016. It's been open for almost a year, a little over a year now. It's really cool. It's hard to describe what it is, so I always tell people they have to come down and actually do it, and then I'll describe it afterwards. A lot easier that way.
I describe it for people if they've been to California Adventureland. The ride is called Soaring Over California. So you get in a chair, and the ride lifts you up, and you're moving in front of this massive Mad Max type theater. And the best part is you're flying through all these scenes, in this case around Washington. You get sprayed in the face with all the odors. So you get a little salt water, you get the tulip fields, you get
oranges.
Like they've got one shot in one of the forests here in Washington where you're driving through and you see these mountain bikers riding mountain bike paths. And you smell the dirt and you smell the pine needles that you're flying through. It's pretty cool. You guys did an awesome job on that ride.
Yeah, it took Kyle, I think, a little over 2 years for filming. It was a lot of front mount helicopter filming and drone film. So it's majority actual footage and a very, very, very small part CGI. And yeah, that was his little project that he did. It's pretty crazy. What you see, you would blow your mind when building this thing. When you're dealing with an old pier like this, we have piling, and a lot of the piling's old. So when we put in the Ferris wheel, we actually had to rip out part of our pier and lay all brand new piling and then put in a separate, if you go out there, there's a seam. It's a separate platform out there that the Ferris wheel stands on. So I told anybody, if there's an earthquake, just run to the end of our pier and hang out next to the Ferris wheel, because it's probably safer than anything in downtown.
And then, Ferris wheel has become the iconic shot of downtown Seattle now for all the news and everything that shows up. Used to be the Space Needle.
Yeah.
And now the Ferris wheel is the most identifiable thing.
Well, that my Uncle Kyle is also a lead on that project. He says it's a miracle that even got done. I mean, the fact that the city approved us to put a Ferris wheel out over the water, where at one time you'll be out over 40 feet off the end of our pier hanging out over the water. And it's been my grandfather's dream, like over 30 years, to have a Ferris wheel down here. He's just loved Ferris wheels. Our carousel is something from the 60s, 70s, and he put that in here. The guy just loves fairs. He loves fair food. He just loves throwing a good party. So.
And you got the license, liquor license, so that you can get drinks and take them on the Ferris wheel.
Yeah, that was a new thing that we added in this year. We've actually always had the liquor license, but we wanted to be able to perfect the operation before adding the wild card of booze on that thing. But what it's really neat, but it's a really good addition to do several years into it. And we feature all heritage liquor. Right now we're doing a hot cider and BSB. It's definitely by far a crowd favorite. During the summer we ran just a simple slushy and batch 12 vodka, and man, that was a huge hit for people. We also work with Legion for we run a lot of their beer out of there, and yeah, I mean, it's fun. People are happy on a Ferris wheel. Put a drink in their hand, they're even happier.
Yeah, I've been a few times and I didn't have a drink. I need to come back and have a drink now.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the lights, the LED lights that are on there?
So we have over a million LED lights on there that we could program, and we are very lucky that our general manager, Jerry Hall, has taken it as a personal pet project of his to run all of our light shows. And he calls it the grown-up light bright. He's got this basically a piece of paper that he puts over his computer screen, and each one of them has a number on it, and that correlates to a light, and he can change the color of that light to whatever degree of that color that you want it to do. And so he's done most recently, I believe it was the Indigenous People Day, he did a really cool Native American light show on there. It almost looked like a dream catcher. I would tell everybody to go on and check that out. But I mean, we do anything from gender reveals to just random holidays to local like charities that want to run things on it. So it's a really fun type of light show that we get to do.
Blue Fridays, yeah.
What was funny is when we were putting up the Ferris wheel, one of the biggest things that was a roadblock for us is the people of Seattle were worried about light pollution and were worried about this being a horrible obstruction to their view. So if you actually stand in downtown Seattle and look this way, straight on our pier, we've angled the Ferris wheel to have the least amount of view resistance. So it's very narrow when you look at it from up, I guess, middle of downtown out. And we've worked hand in hand with our biggest naysayers on our light shows because they were worried that we would just be throwing out obnoxious things. And some of the people that were our biggest naysayers are now our biggest advocates to what we do because we're so community-oriented. And we hear if somebody's got a problem with the light show, we receive the email, we go through it, we'll actually talk with them what their problem was and hopefully rectify that. And, you know, it's funny how much the community, now they'll actually call in and say, yeah, I really like that light show. You guys did a great job with it. You know, maybe next year we can add something else to it. It's like, yeah, why don't you come on down? We can do it together.
But, yeah. Anti-Ferris wheel lights was a stance.
No, neither did I, but it became but Jerry Hall says his favorite thing to do when he's programming lights is to open a bottle of red wine and to listen to fish. That's what he's love fish. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. How many visitors come through?
So we'll see over 3 million visitors to our sidewalk every year. Over 1 million riders to the Ferris wheel a year.
Wow.
So it's crazy to think that we've had 5 million riders in 5 years on that Ferris wheel.
Now we're outside the tourist season, so we've
come right on. I mean,
No wait.
This is if you're a local, this is the time to do it. You come on down, you grab a beer, grab a cocktail, you hop on the Ferris wheel, you get off there, go to Fisherman's, get some fish and chips.
And it's a great date night. When do you stop running it? What time do you shut it down?
10 o'clock start closing during the week, so it's a nice late thing to do. If you need an excuse to go to the waterfront, I mean, that's it. I mean, I know there's a lot of people in Seattle that are scared to come down here because of all the construction and the parking issues. Park uptown, walk a couple blocks, have a cocktail, eat some food, walk it back off, get to your car, and head home. So it's a fun time.
So what's next now? I mean, if you put in
We have a few projects, but we're not going to release those yet.
That's fair.
We are always working on trying to build a gondola, and that is a gondola that would run from the convention center down to our front patio here that would help alleviate some of the parking pressures. So that's been a little bit backburnered, and that's just because when you're dealing with public property and building private transit, it becomes a sticky issue, but it's something that we're always trying to push for.
So, cool.
Yeah. It's a really green way of transporting massive amounts of people, and it gives an alternative to our busing system that sees so many struggles in the greater Seattle area. And, you know, you got to figure, before the waterfront project started, we had over 1,600 parking spots down there. When this whole project's going to be done, we're going to be down below 100. So to keep the viability of the waterfront open, we need to get creative, and we got to figure out a way to keep this historic, iconic area thriving. And so the Pike Place Market's done a great job of adding on, and they're working on doing a stair climb project that'll make a little ease of movement through. But we also want to add something like the gondola that'll help transport people down here, as well as interior. If you think about the number of cruise ships that drop people off right down here, how many people do you know like walking up hills? You know, we'd have stops at up by Ben Arroyo and up at the convention center, so you have a couple different layers of areas where people could hang out and go do shopping or go to the SAM, the Seattle Art Museum, stuff like that.
That would be awesome.
We should talk about that offline. I got a couple ideas.
Thank you so much to Mike Griffith for taking the time to chat with us. He's got his hands in a few different pots. No pun intended. Coming up next on Cast Club Radio, craft beer is huge in Washington State, in the whole Pacific Northwest, really sweeping the country. But another burgeoning market, that would be cider. We talked to Erin James, author of Tasting Cider. She knows everything about cider here in the Pacific Northwest. You don't want to miss it. That's next, right here on Cast Club Radio. Welcome back to Cast Club Radio. Your host, Lydia Cruz, with you. Right now, we're joined by Erin James. You have your hand in so many things. Author of Tasting Cider, we were just talking about it. Editor-in-chief of Cidercraft Magazine and Sip Northwest. How's it going?
That's good.
Welcome.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Is this a good time to talk about cider?
Yeah, it's always a good time to talk about cider.
So what can you tell us about your book, Tasting Cider?
Yeah, so Tasting Cider is the Cidercraft Guide to the Distinctive Flavors of North American Hard Cider. Just like the magazine, we cover semi-exclusively North American cider. In the book, it is exclusively North American cider. So cider made in Canada and the U.S. for this. The book is broken up into
pretty much four different sections. Starts out with the basic historic background intro, basics of cider that brings you up to speed of why and how it is America's fastest growing beverage segment and how it's kind of skyrocketed into the spotlight. And then from there, I break it down into 11 different categories of cider and then perry, which is cider's cousin. It's fermented, all fermented pear juice. And now that I say that, backing up a little bit, cider, in case you didn't know, is fermented apple juice. Actually, Americans are pretty much the only culture that produces alcoholic cider and calls a million different things cider. Because, I mean, my husband and I were just talking about this the other night. We have a British friend that we sent to the grocery store, and we're going, get some cider. And my husband, meant apple juice. And our English friend was just like, there is not any cider at this place you told me to go to. I'm not seeing anything. They don't even have a beer aisle. And he kept saying, no, the cider, it's an alcoholic. And the friend's going, what is non-alcoholic cider? Like, that is ridiculous. So many other cultures have adapted cider, the boozy version, and you would call the other stuff apple juice. So trying to push that lexicon out into the universe, especially in the Pacific Northwest, where we're so apple-friendly, and cider's become huge. So we got those first, that first section, and then the second section profiled 26 different cider makers that all fall within those 12 different categories. We were just talking about Tim from Snowdrift Cider out in East Wenatchee. He's in the book. I think seven other Pacific Northwest makers. Ton of tasting notes, and then we have 30 cocktail recipes with hard cider and 30 cooking with cider and pairing with cider recipes.
Wow.
It's a lot. It was a lot of work.
Yeah. Can you give us a little bit more background on cider in general when you say that we, North America, is the only culture? How long have we been making cider, and where did it really originate?
So apples, that they believe apples originated in the Kazakhstani Alps, and like everything kind of moved west from there. There's a ton of cider culture and tradition and history in Roman history, Spain, France, and the UK. And so, I mean, a lot of people credit Emperor Charlemagne, who gave cider and perry their own Latin names and own beverage categories, as opposed to apple wine. Or there's a lot of different terminology that was used to just kind of describe alcohol.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Pliny writes about apple wine or fermented apples. So there's mention of cider in some sense or another dating back centuries upon centuries upon centuries. So it's a deeply historic beverage, especially in North America, where we like to say it's the drink that founded America. Our founding fathers drank it. Thomas Jefferson was a huge fan. He would drink a tankard every day to settle his stomach in the morning. And I think a tankard comes out to like 32 ounces.
Okay.
So he'd have that for breakfast. And just really get the tummy settled.
In the country. Okay.
That's good. Yep. He actually, his orchard, Monticello, which is super famous in Virginia, is still existing. It still grows heirloom apple varieties. Probably one of the biggest crossover apple varieties that comes with Jefferson fame is the Newtown Pippin or the Albemarle Pippin. It's Albemarle if you're in Albemarle County in Virginia. It's Newtown Pippin everywhere else. Queen Victoria was also a big fan of that apple. So it's a good eating apple out of hand and a good apple that ferments into a complex cider. So there's a ton of history everywhere on the apple. I always like to say that there's nothing more farm to table. Can't see the air quotes I did on that. nothing more farm to table than an apple. I mean, especially in North America, everybody's eating an apple. You know what an apple looks like. You know what it tastes like. And so the fact that that can be fermented into a beverage is pretty cool. I think that's a huge connection for the consumer.
What about Washington specifically or the Pacific Northwest? Because you mentioned some of the apple varieties over there. Is there anything that's really unique about cider that's made here in Washington, just because we have so many apples and we produce so many of the country's apples?
Kind of a two-part question on that, or two-part answer on that. In Washington State, we grow a ton of culinary apples or out-of-hand apples, eating apples. Traditionally, in those countries I mentioned earlier, like France, Spain, UK, there are varieties meant for cider. Just like if you fermented Concord grape, it wouldn't be as complex as if you fermented Cabernet Sauvignon, which is why that's what they do in the American wine trade now. But in the 70s, they weren't. They were doing basic bulk eating grapes, and it was producing really decent acid, but kind of flabby wines and nothing special about them. It still ferments in alcohol, still gets you drunk, but it doesn't taste that great. So as that industry progressed, so did the importing of actual wine grapes. So bringing over real legitimate wine grapes, planting them in America, and then seeing it flourish into a much more complex and complicated and more interesting to drink product, something that pairs better with food, it's more balance. And ultimately, that same thing could happen for cider. So right now in the United States, we have an excess of culinary apples. So that would be Fuji and Granny Smith and Red Delicious and those kind of apples, which, again, will ferment into cider, definitely. But, I mean, if you think about it, the apple that you're eating, if it's boring to eat, it's going to be boring to ferment. So yeah, just kind of like think about Red Delicious. It's big and juicy. There's no acid and the texture sucks. I'm not a Red Delicious fan.
Me either.
It's a really boring apple. But if you get something cool, like I just had an apple from Metropolitan Market last month and I was obsessed with it. It's called Smitten.
Yeah, I've tried a couple from there. I mean, that's how I was introduced to, I think, jazz apples.
Too. So apples that are interesting to eat will ferment into a more interesting cider. On the flip side of that, traditional cider apples are also nicknamed spitters because they are inedible in the sense that you don't want to eat them. Their tannin is so high, their acid is so high, and then they have a decent amount of sugar. So all of those components will produce a really wonderful cider, really balanced cider. More often than not, you're going to find apples with acid and sweetness, less so tannin, which is good because you can kind of balance in, or you can age in oak to give it oak tannin, and just like you would wine or beer for that same kind of quality. So there's a lot you can do with just basic culinary fruit. Long story short, second part of that answer is that, yes, cider's huge in Washington State. We have a ton of fruit here, same as in Oregon, and we're able to ferment basic apples and then throw some other innovation at it, like dry hopping it afterwards, after fermentation, adding in hops, adding in cranberries, adding in all these kind of infusions or adjuncts that are additional supplements to make it more complex, I guess, to make it more interesting to drink. One of the things that are huge in the Northwest are hop ciders. Ginger cider's huge. But what's great that you see a lot around here, especially with hops in particular, or cranberries too, to mention both of those again, those are both things that are grown in excess in the Northwest, so you're able to use continuously local product, which gives it a kind of a cool full circle consumable beverage.
What's one trend that you're seeing emerge in the world of cider that sort of taken the world by storm?
Pineapple cider has been huge.
Interesting.
Really, really, really popular. Draft cider is probably one of the biggest things right now for cider sales, what people are drinking out of. So they're not necessarily buying it a 4-pack or in a 750 milliliter bottle from the grocery store, but they're drinking a ton of it on tap, which is cool. So if you're a cidery and you're just bottling or just canning, you should probably consider putting it in a keg because that is where the movement's being seen right now by consumers. So it's really great too, because if you go to a bar and they have a cider on tap, just like there would be a beer, more often than not, you say, hey, can I taste that, and they'll give you a tiny taste, and then you can say, oh my god, I love that, I'm so glad I tried it, or oh my god, that's terrible, give me something else. And that's how you figure out what ciders you like, just like you would beer or wine. You know, you got to taste continuously, drink all the time, and that's how you find out what cider you like.
So I think a lot of people put cider kind of in the same category as beer, but it tends to be a higher alcohol volume, doesn't it?
It depends. So cider actually is more akin to wine in the sense that it's fermented fruit. It's packaged and sold more like beer on tap or in 6-packs or 22-ounce bottles. Like it has that connection on just a packaging sense with beer. Other than that, and the forced carbonation like you would beer, there's no actual connection to beer. Wow. So, but it's a similar demographic that's drinking it, because beer drinkers, craft beer drinkers, are curious. They want to try what's new, get out there. The sour profile is huge right now, so that connection to cider with that kind of sour tang is really, really popular too. So that is a really big connection. But I think as far as alcohol by volume goes, there's more sugar involved in apples, so it's going to ferment to a higher alcohol content. Just for quick 101 on fermentation, there's sugar in juice, and you put yeast in it, whether they're wild or you add it yourself, the yeast eat the sugar and spit out alcohol, more or less. That's a very simplistic version of that. So the more sugar, the higher alcohol content, because they're going to eat it more up and produce more later. So with traditional cider fruit, it will produce a higher alcohol content because there's higher sugar content. I'd say on average, you're going to see ciders between 5.5 on the very, very low end to 8%. And also that's for legal reasons, because once you breach the 8%, it qualifies as an apple wine. Okay. Legally, that's changed.
Gotta change the name.
Yep. Yeah. That's just changed this last year. It's very exciting. It's another thing that shows how big cider is that the government's taking notice. There's been legislative movements and bills that have been passed to accommodate massively burgeoning cider industry.
Well, you heard it from Aaron James, the expert on cider, especially here in the Pacific Northwest. Anytime is a good time to be tasting cider, to be talking about cider. Go out and grab a copy of her new book. It would make an excellent holiday gift. That's Tasting Cider, and you can get it wherever books are sold. Up next on Cast Club Radio, it's time for a little game of word association. It's holidays after all, okay? You can never have too much fun. That's next, right here on Cast Club Radio. Welcome back to Cast Club Radio. It's time to play one of our favorite games, Word Association, this time with our friend Patrick Spaulding.
So we're going to throw out a few things. Just your first reaction.
Yeah.
So, Jack and Coke.
The mayor.
The mayor?
Yeah. I have a regular. His name is Jerry. He loves Jack Daniels. He single-handedly would sell Jack Daniels.
But he's not the actual mayor.
No, he's not the mayor. Because he knows a lot of people.
Okay.
He knows a lot of people.
He's like a concierge.
Yeah, he is. He's a master of a lot of things. He's a good dude.
Cosmo.
25-something, I don't know, woman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rum and Coke.
I'm not good at this. I don't make a lot of Roman Cokes, you know? I would say, I can't say anything to that one.
Tequila Sunrise.
The Eagles.
So, Long Island Ice
Tea. Brosif.
Brosif?
Yeah, bros.
Is that a bro named Joseph?
Yeah, Brosif or Brosifus or...
Brosifus.
Yeah, any kind of...
Is it the guys or the ladies ordering Long Island?
It's guys. You know, to be honest, in the setting that I was in South Lake Union, I think a lot of people that work for Amazon are like fifth year college students. And it's very much, you know, you can tell by the buildings that go up. I've been in a few of those apartments, you know, barring the ones on the very top floors, they're pretty much all the same minuscule amenities. They can walk to work. So there's a very, it has a college-esque atmosphere. And that's when people order Long Islands. You know, sometimes too, it's maybe that's what they remember, you know. If the situation presents itself and someone orders that and I have the ability to say, hey, you know, why are you ordering this, blah, 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 you know, maybe figure out a little bit and I could maybe steer them towards something else, you know.
Okay. Rosé.
Any day is a good day for rosé. I love rosé.
What about a snifter of cognac?
Like a highbrow kind of, you know, Thurston Howell III kind of. Love it, you know, that kind of...
What about a double of vodka neat?
Some paleo, someone that's like CrossFit, probably CrossFit, trying to get a quick buzz.
Got to keep the core warm.
Yeah. I mean, I love vodka and water when I'm on the beach, you know, it's equal parts fun and equal parts hydration.
Yeah.
Martini.
James Bond. Bacon, not stirred kind of thing, which I guess is supposed to be the Vesper. That might have been a marketing thing a couple of James Bonds ago.
Old fashioned.
I just think classic. Yeah.
Manhattan.
Classic, sophisticated.
Margarita.
Lots of fun.
Daiquiri.
Also lots of fun. I think my favorite go-to drink, if it's just I want something quick, is a DTO, Daiquiri Timeout.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's great. It's an easy ratio. That ratio makes probably five or six other drinks that can also be knocked out real quick when you're in a jam. Hey, my friends want a shot. You know, I'm putting, you know, two parts rum, one part lime, half part sugar, and shaking them.
From
shaking
a daily perspective, who's more fun, margarita or daiquiri?
You'd think margarita was, but I think daiquiri is going to be more fun. Yeah.
It was Hemingway's drink of choice, right?
He had a little Luxardo, and I think it was equal parts lemon and lime as well, yeah. Yeah, it had a little kind of cheeky cherry thing going on with the cherry, you know, Luxardo.
Fireball.
Yeah, I was going to say shots. It's going to be... Oh,
man, I carried Fireball because I would sell it, so, yeah. It's also easy.
Yeah. I think hangover.
Yeah, hangover.
Well, we don't want you to have any hangovers here at Cast Club Radio. Thanks, Patrick Spaulding, for playing along with our game down at the Crab Pot the other day. Justin, let's keep going with the word association theme here. It's a little bit chilly outside, and I've been freezing. What's the first cocktail that comes to mind?
Well, this time of year, the weather turns, holidays are around us, and people like hot drinks. And so the trick is to find a hot drink that will take spirits and be somewhat creative. So we've come up with our spice bourbon hot toddy. And the way we do this is we use 2 ounces of bourbon. We recommend our Elk Rider bourbon or the batch number 12 bourbon, 6 ounces of orange spice tea. And that's just going to the store and finding a really good orange spice tea in the box that you would steep at home. Open the tea bag and there you go. 3 teaspoons of honey, 1/2 ounce of fresh squeezed lemon juice. Just cut a lemon and squeeze it, and garnish that with orange wheel and a cinnamon stick. And all you got to do is get the tea nice and hot, make sure it's all steeped, ready to go. Add your bourbon, honey, lemon juice, stir it, garnish it. You're good to go. And it looks really cool if you put it in one of those clear, tall, hot drink mugs, because then you get to see the beautiful color of the orange spice tea and the bourbon and the honey.
I love a good hot toddy. That sounds delicious.
Yeah. In fact,
keep yourself warm, man.
I'm having one right now. And if you want more recipes like that, go to heritagedistilling.com. Look at our recipes page, and we have a recipe builder so that based on the cocktail you have, the spirit you have in front of you, it will give you a different list of cocktails you can make and how to make them. It's an interactive recipe builder at heritagedistilling.com.
Well, we are right around the holidays, so to everybody celebrating Christmas, celebrating Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever your holiday, hopefully you're spending it with family and friends and your loved ones and just having, I don't know, a great end of 2017 together.
Be safe, be happy, be kind, be back. Cast Club Radio is brought to you here at Cairo. And you can download the podcast at Cairo FM. You can also go to heritagedistilling.com, click on the Cask Club Radio link. And also, we encourage you to go to Facebook and like us at Cask Club Radio.
Thanks for listening to Cask Club Radio, brought to you by Heritage Distilling, part of Cairo Weekends on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
Check us out on mynorthwest.com to learn more and catch up on past episodes.
Cask Club Radio, brought to you by Heritage Distilling on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.